cried. She remained there, holding the bag open until her lungs screamed for oxygen. Then, just when she was about to break off and swim up for air, her head surfaced above the water. She'd done it, at least, sort of. The ship's rear was now a good 3 inches above sea level. Some outside water was still sloshing in, and there was still a big hole in the front, but it was definitely an improvement. She held the bag of holding over the side. All the water! The bag vomited all the water it had taken back into the sea where it belonged. Repeating the process a few more times yielded less and less results, until Catherine saw that the ship was actually starting to sink again. The ice, which had been half-acidly plugging the hole in the hull, must have either snapped free or melted away. It was time to fix the ship. Catherine cranked open the cargo door just enough so that she could slip down into the hold, then reached into the bag of holding. Lightstone! She held the stone before her as she entered the cargo hold and swam to the front of the ship. The ice was gone, and the water was flowing freely into the breach. Catherine dropped the bag and the stone, placed her hands on the damaged wood, and hoped that being underwater wouldn't affect her spellcasting abilities.
Warp wood!
She bubbled out with the last of her breath. The wood surrounding the hole thickened and twisted against her hands. Under normal circumstances, this would be a spell one would use to sink a ship rather than keep it from sinking. And while it didn't completely repair the hole, it did appear to have significantly reduced the size of it. Nightwind was still in extreme danger of sinking, but Catherine hoped that the bag of holding could outpace the leak until she was able to prepare another spell. It was time to find out. She swam down to the bottom of the ship, grabbed the bag, then pushed herself up toward the cargo door. A few bagfuls of water over the side later, she was winning the fight again.
Hey!
Denise's voice was barely audible above the balmy tropical breeze, creaking wood, and sloshing water. Catherine trudged through the knee-high water to dump the bag over the right side, so she could try and see where they were. Denise and Randy had caught up to Butterbean. Catherine waved at them.
You fixed the boat or what?
Kind of, she shouted back. Stay there! I'll come get you! She filled and emptied the bag 3 more times before she felt she'd bought enough time to back up her traveling companions and return them to the ship before it sank. When she was as satisfied as she thought she was likely to be, she dived overboard and swam as hard as she could toward them.
Get in the bag,
she said when she reached the swiftly melting ice island they were all huddled on. She flopped the bag of holding down at Randy's feet.
You all go ahead, said Randy glumly. I failed Basil. I watched him drown while he was screaming for me to save him. I deserve to join him.
Listen, Randy, said Catherine. I'm sorry for your loss. I really am. But my arms and legs are fucking exhausted right now. There will be time enough to mourn once we're on solid ground, and we're not going to make it that far without your help. So please cut the drama and get in the goddamn bag.
Denise didn't wait for a response from Randy. She picked up the bag and pulled it down hard over his head, then held it open for Butterbean, who was more than ready to jump inside. Finally, she pulled the bag down over her own head. Catherine grabbed it and swam back to Nightwind. The thought of those two hillbilly fuckwits taking over bailing duty while she got some rest was the motivation that got her back on board. After Catherine pulled them out of the bag, she demonstrated her water bailing method while they caught their breath. Once she was satisfied that they could take over without her supervision, she retired to her captain's quarters, sipped a bit of Captain Martinoli's spiced rum, and let herself drift off to sleep.
Chapter 50. The sled ride back to the glade was one of the most terrifying and uncomfortable rides Chaz had ever been on. He knew Fuckface would kill him if he thought he could get away with it. The only thing keeping Mordred from killing all of them was the shitbag over his head. Ironically, though, it was Cooper who'd come closest to killing him when Nabi had been willing to chop straight through him to put an end to the Dark Lord. Also, the sled hadn't been built to seat 4, so it was kind of cramped, and the stench of Cooper's raisin shit wasn't at all confined to the shitbag. It was a long, slow ride, and Chaz was able to watch the sun set behind him and rise ahead of him before they finally arrived. The glade was busier than it had been the last time they'd visited. There were now dozens of pixies working and cavorting in the rays of sunlight that poked through the forest canopy. Chaz supposed they might have been there before and had chosen to remain invisible and silent, but that seemed unlikely. When the boar pulled up, everyone stopped what they were doing and approached cautiously, some of them turning invisible. It occurred to Chaz that all the pixies they'd met so far fell inside a young adult age bracket, and he'd wrongly assumed that's just what pixies look like no matter how old they get. But while most of the pixies assembled in front of them looked like they might get carted for beer, there were a few elderly folks, as well as some young children among them. The former appeared almost as youthful as the pixies he'd been traveling with, but the bold and vibrant colors of their hair had faded to gray. The latter were so tiny they could fit inside his cupped hand. Nabi's sister Holly Whirl fluttered down to the front of the crowd, trying to look pleased to see them, but her eyes kept twitching toward Fuckface.
You have succeeded. New buds grow on the tree branches. Thanks to you, we shall enjoy a second spring, and it is safe enough for the children and elders to fly outside again.
Her smile faltered as she glanced between Fuckface and Mordred.
I see there are more of you now than there were when we first met. To whom do we have the honor of welcoming to our glade?
You've met Fuckface,
said Chaz, gratefully stepping away from the sled.
As long as you keep him alive, his ward of protection will help you ferret out and destroy the rest of the Dark Ones.
And the other one?
This is Mordred.
Technically not a lie.
And Mordred is...
My uncle,
said Cooper. It was Chaz's fault. He should have spoken before Cooper had a chance to. Holly Whirl narrowed her eyes at Cooper.
You, a half-orc, ran into your dwarven uncle wandering around in a lifeless forest, then proceeded to bind his hands with a rope?
Cooper farted nervously.
He was abusive. He used to get drunk and touch me in bad places.
Holly Whirl flew closer, sniffed the air, and backed away.
Is that a bag of shit on his head?
Chaz was tempted to let Cooper keep talking and see how deep a hole he could dig himself into, but he wanted to get to the Horse's Head and unload the responsibility for Mordred off his shoulders as soon as possible.
That's the one you refer to as the Dark Lord.
The whole crowd gasped, which was weird, considering a good 3/4 of them had turned invisible by this point.
And you brought him here?
Cried Holly Whirl.
You were supposed to slay the Dark Lord, not bring him into our glade.
She glared at Cooper.
Where is my sister? She wouldn't have stood for this.
Cooper held his axe non-threateningly.
She's still in here, and for what it's worth, she was very much opposed to this.
The Dark Lord took Nabi's wings. Nothing would have stopped her from reaping her vengeance.
We needed Mordred alive. Nabi wasn't happy about it, but she put my needs and the needs of my friends before her own thirst for vengeance.
Holly Whirl circled Cooper, scrutinizing him.
I believe you, both because my sister can be very foolish, and because I have personally witnessed your pathetic attempts at lying.
Thank you.
Do you realize how much power the Dark Lord has consumed?
Cooper nodded.
A substantial amount.
And you seek to contain that power with a bit of twine and a bag of shit.
It seemed a lot less stupid before you put it that way.
Holly Whirl turned to the assembled pixies.
Bind this dwarf properly and get to work on some anti-magic wards.
When several of them flew away to follow her orders, she turned to Chaz.
Dimplethorn had more faith in your safe return than most of us. She's been waiting to give you a token of our appreciation.
Cooper snorted. It was awkward enough without Holly Whirl announcing it in front of everyone. Was it supposed to happen here, with everyone watching? Chaz didn't want to be rude, but getting jerked off by a pixie in front of Cooper and a crowd of spectators was where he drew the line.
Hey, listen, about that. I don't mean to sound unappreciative of the offer, but I...
There you are,
said Dimplethorn, flying hurriedly into view. She smiled at Chaz.
Sorry I'm so late. I was making some last-minute preparations for the surprise I promised you. Please follow me.
That sounded more promising. She was going away from the crowd, and they weren't following her. Chaz wasn't half as bothered about everyone knowing what they were up to, so long as they weren't actually watching it happen. She would have rubbed his dick raw before he could have shot a load under that kind of pressure. Dimplethorn led him to a particularly wide elm tree at the edge of the glade. It was still a little too close to the crowd for his liking, but if they went on the other side of it, he could probably block them out mentally long enough to squirt. But she didn't go on the other side of it. Instead, she flew up to the branches and started tugging random ones. Just when he was about to ask her what she was doing, the ground opened up at his feet. Roots and stones formed steps leading down into a secret tunnel beneath the glade. Dimplethorn flew inside, then turned to him with a seductive smile.
Watch your step.
Now this was some first-class privacy. Chas followed her down the curved staircase, careful not to slip on the mossy stones. He was exhausted from the long sled ride, but he had most of his strength back now, and he was confident he could give her a load that she could truly remember him by. He unlaced his pants and started stroking life into his dick. There was no point in making her work from ground zero. While he didn't want to seem overzealous, getting an erection going would be an act of courtesy and a compliment as well. As his dick got hard in his hand, he wondered what kind of preparations she had made. Scented candles? Lube? Booze? He hoped it was booze. After they reached the bottom of the stairs, Dimplethorn led him down a corridor much better constructed than Morning Glory Hole had been. The support arches keeping the ground from caving in on them were made of living wood, some of them actually sprouting leaves. Luminescent fungus growing on the walls illuminated their way.
This is where we hit the elders and spritelets from the Dark Ones, she explained.
Oh?
Said Chas, feigning interest, but wishing she would talk about something other than old people and children. He stared at her tiny pixie ass as it bobbed and weaved in front of him. He was going to plaster her to the fucking wall with jizz. Whoa, calm down there. We don't want to squirt too early again. One time is a fluke, twice is a pattern. Chas stroked more gently. It took skill and focus to maintain an erection without escalating toward ejaculation. In game terms, he imagined it would involve a combination of dexterity and willpower. The very act of imagining it in game terms was part of the process of de-escalation. His mind was still focused on his dick, which kept it at attention, but thoughts of numbers and statistics and dice and a table full of nerds were almost as much of a counterbalance to his arousal as the room full of children that Dimplethorn led him into.
Surprise!
Said Dimplethorn, turning around to face him.
We've been working on this ever since, oh dear.
A dozen pixie children and half as many elders gawked as Chas frantically tried to pull his pants back up over his stiff and aching junk while at the same time jumping out of the doorway. He failed spectacularly in both endeavors, tripping over his own feet and falling hard to the earthy ground. He rolled out of his audience's view, pulled his pants up properly, and started lacing over the tent he was now pitching. The children in the room were laughing their tiny asses off.
What the fuck was that?
Said Chas.
I thought you were going to, you know, like you did before.
Not in front of a bunch of spritelets and elders.
How was I supposed to know they were down here?
I told you they were, but I suppose you were distracted.
Dimplethorn huffed. Her face was flushed. She peeked back into the room and cleared her throat until the kids stopped laughing.
Would you mind giving us a little time alone?
Chas sat against the wall and covered his face as the pixies filed out of the room and headed down the corridor toward the surface. Some of the elderly ones were voicing their opinions on what just happened.
Shameful! Typical human! Were we supposed to be impressed? Proportionally speaking, it wasn't anything special.
When the voices got far enough away, Chas chanced a peek.
They're gone now,
said Dimplethorn. Her voice was heavy with the distraction of knowing she was going to have to face those people again. Chas crawled hurriedly into the room.
I'm really sorry about that. You have to believe. I didn't know they were...
Of course I believe you.
Dimplethorn smiled at him.
I've believed in you since I first met you. You are the hero I have...
She glared at something giggling behind her, then reached into a small pouch on her belt and hurled a handful of glitter at the seemingly empty space. Some of the glitter fell to the ground, but most of it stayed suspended in the air, taking the form of the heads, torsos, and arms of two pixie children. They let go of the laughter they'd been trying hard to suppress as they flitted out into the corridor. The awkwardness of the situation was only a little less comfortable than Chaz's aching balls, angry at being denied the release they were promised. Right now, he wanted nothing more than to go find a private place to deliver on that promise, then get as far away from this forest as possible. Dimplethorn was a sweet girl, but Chas knew that there was a threshold for how badly he could fuck up in a relationship and still have a chance of repairing the damage. And he knew that he'd crossed well over into that threshold the moment he jerked off in front of a bunch of children and old people. It was time to cut this one loose, get the hell out, and never look back.
You've been more generous to me than I deserve,
he said.
I really can't accept anything more.
Dimplethorn's face turned angry.
I told those children a story of the hero who would deliver them from the Dark Lord's power. They've worked very hard over the past couple of days to decorate this for you. Toss it on a fire for all I care once you leave this wood, but you will leave here with it.
Chaz was beginning to suspect that the surprise Dimplethorn had in mind was not, in fact, another hand job. He followed her teary gaze to the paint-splattered table at the center of the room which all the children had been gathered around when he first entered. Atop the table sat some kind of oddly shaped leather box covered in colorful hand-painted illustrations of what the children obviously expected his confrontation with the Dark Lord to have looked like. There wasn't a single depiction of a naked dwarf with a bag of shit over his head, but there were a bunch of pictures of a kick-ass bard blasting the shit out of some black demon beast with energy beams and lightning bolts which emanated from a variety of musical instruments.
Are these me?
Dimplethorn wiped a tear away and nodded. None of these kids had ever seen Chaz, but the similarities were enough to tell that Dimplethorn had given them some rough guidelines to work with. An instrument of choice was clearly not one of those guidelines, however, as Chaz was depicted kicking the Dark Lord's ass with horns and pipes and harps and lutes and... Finally, he recognized the strange box for what it was.
It's a loot case, he said appreciatively.
You said your last loot broke. I thought this might help you take better care of your new one.
That's very thoughtful of you. When I acquire a new loot, I shall keep it safe in here.
Dimplethorn rolled her eyes.
Open the box, stupid.
Chaz undid the clasp holding the case shut, then opened the lid. While the case was hastily finger-painted by a bunch of kids, the instrument itself was an exquisitely tasteful mix of art and nature. Like the support arches keeping this bunker from caving in on them, the lute appeared to be made of living wood. Inspecting it more closely as he carefully lifted it out of its case, Chaz saw that even the strings gleamed with the green sheen of living wood. They were pleasantly firm and responsive as he strummed, filling the room with strong, pure notes. He looked up at Dimplethorn.
How does a thing like this exist?
Many of our elders are skilled craftsmen, and fae folk are very fond of music. They applied their knowledge and scaled up their efforts to account for your size. Then the elder druids enchanted the lute as I requested. None of them believed in you as I did, and I had to consume much elder seed to have this made.
Oh, wow, said Chaz. You shouldn't have done that. Honestly, you really shouldn't have.
Dimplethorn frowned.
Yes, elder seed is most bitter.
Then her eyes lit up as she flew closer to him.
But I think you'll find it was worth it. There is magic in the lute. Every 10 minutes you play, you can work a suggestion spell into the music.
Useful. I can see how that would be worth gulping down gallons of expired pixie jizz.
I'm so happy you like it.
Chaz placed the lute back into its case. As delighted as Dimplethorn seemed to have gone to such lengths to have this gift made for him, he felt bad about accepting it. But he knew that not accepting it would mean that she'd blown a bunch of geriatrics for nothing.
Thank you,
he said as non-awkwardly as he could.
I'll always cherish this.
You'll play us a song before you leave, won't you?
Chaz closed the case, picked it up, and backed toward the doorway.
Of course. I'm just going to need a few minutes alone to get a feel for the strings.
Dimplethorn smiled.
I'll see you on the surface.
Chaz nodded, then hurried back up the tunnel and into the woods in search of a private place where he could empty his balls. Chapter 51. The monotonous task of bailing out a ship with cracks in the hull proved therapeutic for Randy. He didn't blame Catherine for Basil's death. As much as he'd wanted to right after the fact, he couldn't even bring himself to take the blame. He could have done things differently. He could have left Basil on that island, and he might have done that and stayed there with him if things hadn't been happening so fast. But he knew that whatever mistakes he'd made were just that, mistakes. He'd done his best to take care of Basil, but his best hadn't been good enough. As he picked up the bag of holding, which Denise had tossed down to him from the deck, Randy prayed that Basil was in a better place.
I reckon we can take a break,
Denise called down to him.
Now that we know we can bail it faster than it can fill up, we might as well let some water accumulate. You go ahead, said Randy, happy to have the work to occupy his mind. I'm gonna keep going.
We've been at this all night, Randy, and all the while that lazy tree-hugging bitch and her wolf have been sleeping. You ever notice this whole trip seems to be about her? She puts our lives at risk to save her good-for-nothing brother. She runs off and leaves Basil for dead to save her precious boat. Dumb bitch is gonna get us all killed, mark my words. She spent a couple of days on a boat, same as us, and thinks she knows everything there is to know about sailing now? Does that sound right to you?
Well, maybe she's a quick learner.
Don't nobody learn nothing that quick.
Denise leaned in, poked her head down into the cargo hold, and spoke in a low voice.
I tell you what, Randy, when a week passes with no sign of land, and the hunger really starts to set in, I reckon she's the first to go.
Randy was going to voice his objection, but Catherine spoke up before he could get a word out. Good morning! Denise jerked her head up and slammed it hard against the cargo door.
Son of a fuck!
Sorry, said Catherine. I didn't mean to interrupt. Well, what were you guys talking about? Denise rubbed the back of her head as she pulled out from the cargo hold.
Gilligan's Island. Like, what if they never made it to the island and they was all just stranded out on that boat? Which one should they eat first? I chose Marianne. Stupid bitch has it coming, if you ask me.
That was a decent attempt at a save, depending on how much Catherine had heard before making herself known. Catherine cranked the cargo door open wider until she could see Randy. Randy was shocked to see how light it was outside. Had they really worked the whole night through? Who did you choose? Catherine asked Randy.
I ain't giving it much thought, to be honest. Maybe Gilligan?
Catherine sat on the deck, letting her feet dangle down into the cargo hold. That's interesting. Why Gilligan? Randy shrugged.
This whole line of thinking is pretty gross. I ain't got nothing against Gilligan, and I don't want nobody to eat nobody. But if I had to choose, he seems like the most ethical choice.
More than the Howells? They've lived the longest and most privileged lives.
That ain't no reason to eat 'em, said Randy. I reckon whatever happened that got them all lost, it was most likely Gilligan's fault. And he'll probably keep on screwing things up, as he tends to do. The longer he stays alive, the more people will eventually have to be eaten.
Catherine nodded. I can see some logic in that. It's odd that neither of you chose the skipper. The rest of the gang could survive for weeks on his fat ass.
That's crazy, said Denise. He's the only one who knows how to navigate the goddamn boat.
You make a good point. It seems then that the rest of the crew would do well to shut the fuck up and do what the skipper tells them to do, so that everyone can get back to land as safely and quickly as possible. Randy wasn't certain, but he felt there may have been some subtext in that.
I might change mine to Ginger, said Denise. She thinks she's such hot shit. See how hot she looks with them titties chewed off.
Catherine sighed. Okay then, that's enough of that. I've collected a few scraps of wood I think I can seal the rest of the breach with, but I won't be able to hold them in place from the inside while all that water's gushing through. I need you two to lower me down on a rope so that I can plug the cracks from the outside. That seemed unnecessarily risky to Randy.
Why don't you just use that spell you done when you was climbing all over the side of the boat before?
I'll use it if you two somehow manage to fuck up the task of holding a rope, but I'd rather keep it in case I need it later.
Good idea.
Randy waded toward the cargo door, his exhaustion now catching up to him. Half the water he was wading through might have been his own sweat. He was actually looking forward to getting out on the deck and letting the sun dry his clothes. Catherine tossed a loop of thick rope down to him. You're going to be the anchor. I'll put this around you and keep your eyes on the breach from inside. So much for drying off in the sun. Randy held the loop open and stepped into it like a pair of pants. He pulled the loop up to his waist and slid the knot toward him until it was snug. He looked up at Catherine.
That's a nice knot.
I know, right? I swear, I didn't know how to tie that yesterday. She secured herself in the loop on the other end of the rope, then handed the middle coil to Denise. You're the relay. You keep me held steady and pass messages back between me and Randy.
I know what a fucking relay is. Let's get this thing done.
While he waited for either a relayed message from Denise or something to happen from Catherine's end on the other side of the hull, Randy opened the bag of holding and drained out as much water as he could
so that the breach was visible. Water sprayed in through the thin cracks. The pressure was so great that the water was painful to touch. Randy agreed with Catherine's assessment that it would have been impossible to plug the holes from the inside. After a few minutes of watching the water spray in, the spray patterns changed. Randy could hear a faint banging from the outside. Catherine was trying to hammer in ill-fitting pieces of wood to close the gaps. It wasn't working. No less water was getting in the boat, it was just coming in at different angles. Randy was disheartened by Catherine's effort and a little bit embarrassed for her. She'd seemed so confident in her ability to fix the problem, but this was a kindergarten-level solution. He supposed it was good that she hadn't wasted that spell, at least. But now they were back to being stranded at sea. If it really did come down to having to eat each other, Randy thought he might simply take his own life. Sure, suicide was generally considered a sin, but if it was done to keep other people from having to choose which person they were going to kill and eat first, then he figured Jesus would understand. After all, he'd given his life so that we all might...
The heck?
The water stopped gushing in as suddenly as if someone had turned off a faucet. The breach was completely sealed. Those pieces of wood Catherine had forced in had warped somehow, expanding to fit the gaps exactly.
Hey, Randy!
Denise shouted from up on the deck.
She wants to know if it worked!
Yes! Cried Randy.
I don't know how, but she did it!
He started pulling the rope.
Reel her in! This one's a keeper!
Catherine boarded her ship once more and ordered Denise down into the cargo hold to help Randy sweep the rest of the water into the bag of holding. She complied with zero fuss.
I am none too pleased at the way she thinks she can boss us around like this.
Denise voiced her opinions extra low and repeatedly glanced up at the cargo door to make sure Catherine wasn't peeking in on them.
So she fixed a hole in a boat. Big fucking deal. That don't give her the right to treat us like slaves, making us do all the work while she struts around on the deck like some kind of Panamanian drug runner's wife. You giving any more thought to what I asked you about before? About when the hunger sets in?
Randy shrugged.
Y'all made good enough points, but I reckon I'm gonna stick with Gilligan.
Denise's eyes went wide with terror. She glanced back at the cargo door. When she turned back to Randy, her eyes had their usual look of annoyance again.
God damn it, Randy. I'm talking about us. Who knows how long we're gonna have to wait out here before another ship passes by to rescue us. There's only so long we'll be able to survive on them shriveled up rat corpses. Sooner or later, we're gonna have to make a hard decision, if you catch my meaning. When the time comes, I got to know if you're gonna have my... Woo!
Denise fell on her ass into a puddle as the ship jerked forward. Randy managed to keep his balance and steady himself.
Are we moving?
He splashed some puddles as he ran toward the cargo ramp. When he got to the deck, he found all the sails open and full of wind. He looked over the railing to see water rushing toward the rear of the ship. They were really moving. Catherine actually seemed to know how to sail.
Catherine!
Randy called out when he couldn't find her.
Oh, here!
Catherine's voice was coming from above, but it sounded like she was gagged. Randy looked up and found her hanging upside down with her legs twisted up in the rigging. She had the end of a rope in her mouth, the other end of which was attached to a small black triangular sail.
You all right?
Catherine finished fiddling with whatever she was fiddling with, then took the rope out of her mouth to tie it to the whatever. She smiled down at Randy.
Not too shabby, huh?
Well, I'll be a motherfucker,
said Denise, joining Randy on the deck. She frowned up at Catherine.
How the fuck did you learn how to sail in a goddamn ice prison?
Catherine crawled halfway down the mainmast like a squirrel, then hopped down the rest of the way, landing confidently on her feet.
I must have leveled up. The way I understand it, you get more abilities and skills when your character reaches a higher level. I must have gotten the sailing skill or something.
And just what in the hell did you do to reach a higher level?
I don't know. Maybe we got a bunch of experience points for killing the Ice Queen. She was kind of a badass.
I killed the Ice Queen, said Denise.
Y'all ain't done shit.
Catherine shrugged. I guess the game decided it was a team effort.
Bullshit. It was my idea to feed that potion to Basil. It was me who carried it up my asshole that whole time.
I meant to ask you about that.
Catherine cocked her head sideways and narrowed her eyes at Denise.
That demonstrated a lot more foresight than I believe you're capable of.
Thank you.
Why did you have that potion up your ass? And don't even bother trying to tell me it was part of your plan to take down the Ice Queen all along. Denise scowled as she mentally revised her answer. Catherine's expression grew more impatient. Tell me the truth, or you'll spend the rest of this trip in the cargo hold. Denise sighed.
Oh, fine. I swiped it from them cannibals on the Foggy Island. I thought I might be able to use it if we ever got back to Earth. Maybe I could grow my nuts back, you know?
That's a perfectly valid reason, said Catherine. I'm honestly really impressed that you thought of it. Why would you feel compelled to lie about that? Denise shrugged.
I don't know. I guess I just ain't comfortable talking about my missing nuts in front of a lady and a faggot.
She looked up at Randy as if shocked by her own words.
I'm sorry, a queer.
Randy wasn't sure how that was supposed to be any better, considering the context, but she sounded sincere enough. I'll keep an eye on the horizon, said Catherine. You two get some rest. You've earned it. Randy and Denise stretched out on the benches that ran along the walls at the ship's rear and took in some sun.
Hey, Denise, said Randy.
Yeah? What happened at the end of that Frizzles movie? I mean, with the townsfolk and all that. They ever come to accept her? Oh, yeah, right away. It was like they never gave a shit about her ice powers in the first place. She made it snow in the summer, and everyone thought she was the fucking tits.
Then why did the king and queen lock her in a room?
Denise shrugged.
Shitty parenting, I guess. She would have been way less fucked up if they'd died a lot earlier.
It was sad to think about, but she might have been right. Then again, it was possible that Denise wasn't giving the most faithful a synopsis of the story. Randy decided to reserve his judgment on that until he was able to see the movie for himself.
Hey, Denise! Jesus Christ, Randy! I'm trying to get some fucking sleep! I appreciate you using up that potion to save our lives. I know how much you miss having testicles. It ain't nothing to get all weepy over. There's more potions where that came from.
That was true. When they figured out a way to get back home and in their proper bodies, Randy and Denise could take another trip with Captain Longfellow. Randy could say a proper goodbye to Alexei, and Denise could get another one of those potions. Randy drifted off to sleep with renewed hope that someday, somehow, everything was going to be all right. Chapter 52.
I never thought I'd be this happy to get back to this city, said Julian,
as he and Stacy rode through the northern gate of Cardinia and into the crowded, bustling streets.
It's kind of scary how much this place is starting to feel like home.
I'm just happy to be out of those goddamn mountains.
Stacy scanned up and down the main street, hoping to see a food vendor. They'd managed to scrounge enough to keep themselves alive, but she longed for some properly prepared food. It didn't have to be gourmet. Hell, it didn't even have to be good. Some of Goose Waddle's Arby's would even go down nicely right now. She could tear into that shit.
Do you think Magra intentionally sent us down the wrong path?
Asked Julian.
Nah, I think she's just genuinely terrible with directions. Getting lost was how she got captured by those Temerian freaks in the first place, remember?
There sure were a lot of trolls in those mountains.
Lucky for us, they're pretty stupid, and they've really got a taste for horse meat.
Julian frowned down at the horse he was riding.
I feel really bad about that.
Stacy gave him a friendly punch on the arm.
You did what you had to do. They're in a better place now.
Sometimes I think that when I die, I'll have to answer for all those horses whose lives were cut short prematurely because of me.
You think God's a brownie?
Julian gasped. His eyes widened.
Jesus, Julian, said Stacy. Relax. That wasn't a serious question. I'm not even sure if I believe that God exists, or bronies for that matter.
No, it's not that.
Stacy had seen that look on his face one time before.
Is it Ravenous?
Julian nodded.
He must have made it back to the horse head.
The excitement faded from his eyes and voice.
Now that I know he's okay, I feel bad for not having been more concerned about Cooper and... shit, what's that other guy's name?
The Bard? I don't remember. Wasn't it something like Steve?
Yeah, I think it was Steve. You think it's possible they could have survived that fall?
Stacy shrugged.
Anything's possible. We survived.
We survived because you built a hang glider with bamboo, bedsheets, and your extremely high intelligence score. They didn't have any of those things.
Cooper's tough as shit, though. Physics is kind of wonky in this world.
Maybe he had enough hit points to survive the fall.
Stacy frowned.
That being the case, I wouldn't hold out too much hope for Steve.
Her growling stomach reminded her that there was probably food at the Horse Head.
No point in all this speculation. Let's go and find out.
They guided their horses as fast as safety and courtesy on the busy Cardinian streets would allow, which wasn't very fast at all. They probably could have made better time walking. The Horse Head Inn was barely in view when Stacy spotted Ravenous diving down on them like a black feathery tomahawk missile.
Julian!
Stacy wiped a tear away from her right eye. Their reunion was as touching as a man hugging a bird could be.
I didn't think I'd ever see you again, said Julian. You wouldn't believe what we've been through since we got separated.
Ha! Squawked Ravenous. You think you've been through some strange and unpleasant circumstances? Just wait until I tell you about our little adventure.
Our? Does that mean that Cooper and Steve are alive?
Steve, sir?
Holy fucking shit,
said Cooper, stepping out the Horse Head entrance. Stacy screamed and clapped her hands.
Cooper!
She ran up to give him a big hug, then slowed down once the smell hit her and raised her hand for a high five. When she got a few feet closer, she settled for a wave.
Hey!
Then she waved at Steve, who'd just come out to join Cooper.
Hey, Steve!
Steve frowned.
It's Chaz.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
I'm glad you guys made it back,
said Cooper.
I thought you might still be on the Crescent Shadow. I was about to start heading back that way to look for you.
I think we would have been long dead by now if we were still in those cages, said Julian. But thanks for the thought.
Cooper and Chaz stood aside to let them inside. There weren't as many people around as there were last time Stacy had been in there. The ones she knew by name, Frank, Rhonda, and Tony the Elf, nodded at her and Julian over their drinks. Stacy hadn't been expecting a ticker tape parade, but she was once again disappointed at the amount of enthusiasm her arrival provoked from these people.
I knew you'd gotten out of the cages,
said Cooper.
I figured if Dave could get out, the rest of you surely could.
Stacy stopped thinking about food for a second.
Dave? What do you know about Dave?
Cooper pointed his thumb back toward the group at the bar.
Frank said Dave was here about a week ago.
A week? Said Julian. How could Dave have gotten here before we did? Dave never gets anywhere first.
Dave has undergone some changes recently, said Frank.
His tone suggested he was even less excited about Dave's arrival than he was about theirs.
I don't expect he'll be returning here anytime soon.
Julian put his hand over Ravenous, who was tucked into a serape.
What are you talking about? What happened to Dave?
He's a were-rat. He arrived here with some old wizard, lost control of himself under the full moon, and ripped the poor old bastard's throat out.
Stacy gasped. This was all sounding too familiar. The last time she'd come here, she'd arrived with Julian, who had recently reunited with Ravenous. She'd been greeted coldly by people who witnessed one of their own commit a murder. Were the similarities even more specific?
The old wizard he killed. Was it Mordred?
Frank shrugged.
I don't think so. At least that's not how he introduced himself.
He glanced at Rhonda and Tony the Elf, who shrugged and nodded in response.
But speaking of Mordred, we may have captured another one.
We brought him back,
said Cooper.
It's totally him.
Are you serious? Said Julian. Did he identify himself?
Frank swallowed back some beer, still not looking nearly as enthusiastic as he should with that kind of news.
He seems like the real deal, but there's no point in getting all worked up about it. Until we have one of those dice, he's just a liability in a coma, tied to a chair in the cellar with a bag of shit over his head.
Stacy and Julian looked at each other. Stacy was curious about the bag of shit thing, but felt it could wait until after she revealed her own bit of news. She pulled the chain out of her pocket and let the die hang below her hand.
Cheer up, Frank. We didn't come back empty-handed either.
She could practically read the thoughts going through his head by the changing expressions on his face. What the fuck do I care about some souvenir trash piece of jewelry? Then again, I'm curious if it has any magical properties. Holy fucking shit, is that one of the dice? The last stage was punctuated with a spray of beer from Frank's mouth.
I can't believe it,
said Rhonda.
Where did you... How did you...
Stacy brushed her fingernails on the front of her tight leather top as she approached the bar.
A little bit of detective work, a little bit of ass-kicking, and a pinch of seduction.
Julian cleared his throat.
I seem to recall there being some teamwork involved.
Tony the Elf reached out tentatively for the die.
Please, said Stacy, thrusting the chain into his hand. You don't know how thrilled I am to hand off the responsibility. And now that we've got Mordred, we should all be good to go, right?
Frank shrugged. We thought that once before. It proved a little more complicated than that, as you may recall.
I have suggestion, said Chaz.
After a tense moment of silence, Frank spoke up.
Yes, we're listening.
Chaz rolled his eyes.
No, I meant I have the spell suggestion. Remember, I mentioned it before. One of the pixies gave me a magic lute which cast the spell. I think I can coerce Mordred into saying our names while we force him to hold the die.
Frank nodded.
Very good. That just might do the trick. Now, how do we go about waking the fat son of a bitch up?
I have a suggestion,
said Chaz. Everyone glanced away from him like they were embarrassed for him.
Dude,
said Cooper.
I know you don't get to feel useful very often, but...
Chaz stopped him with a middle finger, which he then displayed to everyone else until he had their attention again.
I meant an actual suggestion on how we might wake Mordred up. That,
Tony the Elf cleared his throat.
Free-spirited dwarf woman who arrived with Randy beat the shit out of the last Mordred we captured, but didn't get so much as a whimper out of him.
Pain isn't going to do the job. That's why Mordred was able to let the Green Mother penetrate him.
Rhonda cringed.
Maybe you can skip this part?
Chaz turned to Cooper.
Do you remember what caused Mordred to wake up?
Cooper shrugged.
I figured he had some kind of contingency spell set to wake him if somebody was trying to pull the Green Mother's, appendages out of his, orifices.
He seemed to be trying to choose his words carefully, but the images forming in Stacy's head were almost certainly worse than whatever the reality had been.
Wrong,
said Chaz.
If that was the case, he would have woken up as soon as he started chopping at the wood, pumping life force up his ass.
Frank and Tony the Elf winced. Frank pushed his beer glass to the side.
Seriously, is this leading to a conclusion of some sort?
You said Mordred didn't wake up when Denise beat the shit out of him. Do you know if she tried suffocating him?
No, said Frank. And I'm going to have to stop you there. We're not proud of how we handled things before, looking the other way while Denise tortured a guy in our cellar.
Maybe suffocation was too strong a word. I'm just talking about pinching his nose and lips closed for a minute to see if that forces him awake. When he woke up in the forest, it was right after the tunnel caved in on us.
Frank, Rhonda, and Tony the Elf looked at each other and nodded their consent.
Fritz,
said Tony the Elf to someone in the small crowd which had gathered around them.
See if you can pry the die loose from the dragon's claw. Not a problem,
said the elf, who enthusiastically accepted the task assigned to him.
Be careful with it,
Tony the Elf seemed uncharacteristically giddy. Even Frank had a spark of hope in his eyes. Rhonda watched Fritz walk back to his table with the die, then stared down into her nearly empty beer glass.
We might still have a problem.
Shit, said Frank, like he knew it was too early to start getting his hopes up. What is it?
What if we need the same die that brought us here to get us back? We've only got one of those dice. Does that mean only 1/6 of us get to go home?
It's better than nothing, said Stacy. If that's the case, those of us who get left behind can start an expedition to go find the other dice. Sure, it'll take a little legwork, but it's not impossible. It's certainly no reason to not celebrate a small victory while we've got one.
That's right, said Julian. And it's also nothing to get all gloomy about until we know if that's the case or not. Let's work with what we've got, then go from there. Got it,
cried Fritz, holding up the die, now unmounted from the pendant. Frank gulped down the rest of his beer.
Fuck it. Let's do this. Somebody go downstairs and drag that tubby piece of shit up here.
A solid-looking dwarf pointed at Cooper.
You, let's go.
Cooper followed him down into the cellar. When he moved out of the way, Stacy noticed Chaz scribbling something on a piece of paper.
What's wrong?
She asked Julian, whose face was showing less excitement than the current median excitement level at the Horse Head Inn.
You know I can't go back yet.
Julian stroked the feathers on Ravenous's back. Stacy genuinely felt sorry for him, having to make a choice between keeping his bird friend and returning to his real life, but also a little frustrated that it was actually a choice at all.
Yet, What's your plan? Are you going to hang out here until Ravenous dies of natural causes? That could be decades. And in the meantime, who knows how much of your real life you'll have let waste away. I don't want to sound callous, but you need to say goodbye.
Julian was staring at her like he had something to say the whole time, but was waiting to let her finish speaking her mind.
Ravenous? I need to speak with Stacy alone for a minute. Would you mind waiting outside?
Of course, sir.
Ravenous hopped onto his forearm, then launched himself into the air and flapped out the still open front door.
I'm not going to tell you that saying goodbye to Ravenous isn't going to be difficult, but I can't leave here without the people I arrived with. What about Dave and Catherine? For all we know, she could have even had Tim resurrected. And then there's Randy, and Denise, I guess.
Stacy nodded. You're a good friend, Julian. I'll stay back and help you gather everyone together, but... She really didn't like how vulnerable what she was about to say made her feel.
Will you promise me that you'll come back after we get everyone? I've been doing some thinking, and it's going to be tough to try to form a serious relationship with a man who hasn't had this experience. There would always be this part of my life that I'd either have to keep to myself or sound like a crazy person for talking about.
Now that she'd actually spoken it out loud, it sounded less vulnerable and more heartlessly pragmatic.
And there's also the fact that I really like you, of course.
Julian smiled, but there was sadness in his eyes.
The horsemen had no memory of their time here. I'm probably not even going to remember having met you.
Stacy's chest tightened. She didn't want to forget her time here, and she certainly didn't want to forget Julian.
At least I won't have to worry about that sounding like a crazy person thing.
Julian shrugged.
You were still normal when you saw me and Goosewaddle trash your boss's office with a horse and a giant scorpion. You'll probably still remember that.
Shit, that's right. How am I going to explain that?
Or your sudden disappearance just after the fact. I bet you're a person of interest.
A few short moments ago, Stacy's biggest concern was how she was going to reconnect with Julian back in the real world. That seemed frivolous, now that she was looking at being unemployed and wanted by the police. Before she could think up anything to respond with, the crowd at the cellar door parted to let the strong-looking dwarf through. He held the back of a sturdy wooden chair as he backed carefully up the stairs. Sitting in the chair was another dwarf, this one naked but for the ropes that tied him securely to the chair, glowing crystals on hempen twine tied to his wrists, ankles, and around his neck, and a splotchy brown cotton bag covering his head. The facial expressions on the crowd, which was now backing further away, suggested that the aforementioned bag of shit was not a metaphor for something else. When Cooper, who was carrying the bottom of the chair, reached the top of the staircase, he and the dwarf brought the prisoner to the middle of the room and set him down. Cooper placed his hand on the bag.
Ready?
Frank nodded eagerly, rolling the magical die between his palms. Cooper lifted the bag, revealing the horrified face of a dwarf who'd seen better days. He was asleep, but his parting expression, still frozen in place, suggested it had been an emergency evacuation. His bushy beard, mustache, eyebrows, and hair were all caked in a dried brown substance which Stacy doubted very much was mud.
"Would you mind doing the honors?" Frank asked Cooper. "I mean, since you're right there already."
Cooper scowled at him.
"Fine."
He pinched the captive dwarf's nose with one hand and pressed the other hand firmly over his mouth. Stacy counted in heartbeats. She didn't make it to 10 before the dwarf's terrified eyes popped wide open. Cooper let go of the dwarf's face and backed away.
"How do you live with yourself?"
cried the dwarf.
"I'll be doing you a mercy when I destroy you."
He struggled with his ropes, seeming to only now realize that he was tied to a chair. He scanned the room, sneering at everyone.
"You're all the same fools I sent here. I thought the taste of reality might toughen you up, make you respect the game more. But all you've done is cower here in your little tavern, wishing to go back to your dreary ordinary lives and squander this opportunity for greatness that I've given you."
"Holy shit,"
said Frank. He was breathing hard and fast.
"It really is you, you twisted son of a bitch. We've got you."
"You've got nothing."
Mordred nodded toward Cooper.
"This idiot saw me move tons of earth with my new powers. Do you honestly think you can contain me with simple ropes?"
He closed his eyes, turned up his palms, and began chanting. Most of the Horsehead gang started backing toward the door, but Cooper moved behind Mordred and held the bag of shit ready to bring down on his head. Mordred opened his panicky eyes.
What's wrong? What happened?
Cooper grinned and lowered the bag.
Those pixies don't fuck around. I told them the shit bag was keeping you under control, but they insisted on putting a bunch of anti-magic crystals on you.
If I have to abandon this body, my others will only grow stronger faster. And when I come for you, I promise my vengeance will not be swift.
You can't really abandon it now, and we know how to wake you up.
Cooper rubbed his stomach.
Your threats are fucking with my insides, though. I only wiped with the bag before. Next time, I think I might just fill it up.
Mordred's sneer disappeared. He was not taking Cooper's threats lightly.
What do you want from me?
Stacy looked at Frank. He seemed as impressed as she was that Mordred was finally compliant.
You know what we want, said Frank. We want to go home.
He turned to Chaz.
Let's see what you've got.
Chaz nodded and pulled out his lute. It appeared to be made of still living tree branches, but it sounded surprisingly musical when he began to strum the strings.
We found you underground with tree roots up your keister. I suggest you make no sound until I tell you, mister.
Mordred's eyes said, what the fuck? And though his mouth tried to do the same, no sound came out.
Ha!
Said Chaz, obviously very proud of himself.
What do you think of that?
Everyone shifted uncomfortably.
That last rhyme was a little on the weak side, Frank finally said.
Chaz's shoulders dropped.
I had literally 5 minutes to come up with something. It worked, didn't it?
Oh, sure. As far as that's concerned, it was fantastic. I thought you were looking for honest critique on its artistic merit.
Frank held up the die for everyone to see.
Who wants to go first?
I nominate you, Frank, said Tony the Elf. We've had our differences in the past, but you've carried us through some hard times. I think you've earned the honor.
Frank shook his head.
I know many of you are in a hurry, but I wouldn't mind taking a few minutes to say goodbye to this place. Stacy, why don't you go first? You brought the die back.
That's nice of you, Frank, but Julian and I are going to go round up the folks we came here with. Frank nodded.
Yes, we should get some folks on that as well, but we need to make sure this thing is going to work before we do that. Doesn't anyone want to go first?
I'll go,
said Fritz, the elf who'd unmounted the die. Cooper turned to Chaz.
Let me know if you need help finding a word that rhymes with Fritz. I've got one in mind.
Everyone laughed. It was as happy as Stacy had seen this place since the horseman disappeared. Chaz smiled.
Thank you, but I think I've got something.
Mordred squirmed and struggled and tried to scream as Cooper forced his fingers open and Frank put the die in his palm. Cooper closed Mordred's fingers around the die, then nodded up at Chaz.
Rock and roll, dude.
Chaz cleared his throat and strummed his lute.
I've but one life to live, as everybody has. I hope you can forgive. Mordred, please say Chaz.
What?
Said Fritz.
You dick!
Said Cooper.
Chaz!
Said Mordred, then gasped. Chaz closed his eyes tightly and squatted like a paratrooper about to touch ground. He neither disappeared nor turned into a different person. After a long, silent moment of nothing, he slowly opened his eyes to find everyone glaring at him.
Shit.
He would have time to answer for his dick move later. For now, everyone was speculating on why it hadn't worked.
Maybe that wasn't his die,
said Rhonda, referring back to her theory from a few minutes ago.
Maybe the anti-magic crystals are interfering, said Julian.
Maybe it doesn't work if he's coerced,
said Tony the Elf. His face suddenly went pale as he locked eyes with Mordred. Half a second later, Mordred's eyes lit up with realization. He smiled wide.
Mordred, ow!
Stacy kicked Mordred's hand, sending the die flying upward. It hit the ceiling, bounced off a wall, then shattered into a million black crystalline shards on the floor. For a moment, the only sound in the room was the memory echo of shattering die. Then Mordred started laughing.
I hope you didn't pay too much for that cheap glass replica.
Every other eye in the room turned to Stacy and Julian.
That was no replica, said Stacy. That was the real deal.
That's strange,
said Mordred in a way that was inviting a kick to the face.
They didn't break when I threw them from the top floor of the Beauregard.
He sneered,
slowly moving his narrow-eyed gaze from Stacy to Frank.
I'm curious, though, as to how and why you managed to procure a phony die. Could it be that you've misplaced the original somehow?
Of course not, Frank lied.
Mordred shrugged as much as his restraints would allow.
Then perhaps we should try again.
He opened his hand.
I'm ready when you are, Frank.
Frank made a weak effort to mask his frustration.
Cooper, bag him.
For what little satisfaction it was worth, that wiped the smug look from Mordred's face.
No, no, no!
He dared not open his mouth to speak once the bag came down, instead continuing his protest exclusively with the letter M. He squirmed and bucked, but the ropes held firm. Finally, he went limp. Frank glared up at Stacy and Julian.
What the hell was that?
Watch the tone, Frank, said Stacy. We've been out there in the field, risking our lives, while you've been sitting on your ass here in the horse head.
Don't you tell me to watch my tone. We're back to square one, and now Mordred knows we don't have the dice.
A long, loud exhalation came from the bag of shit on Mordred's head.
Actually,
he said in a nasally voice as he held up his head and both middle fingers.
I didn't know for sure until now, so thanks for that.
His hands and head went limp again.
Shit, said Frank. Bring him back down to the cellar.
Cooper and the dwarf picked up Mordred's chair and started back down the stairs. Frank hurriedly closed the door behind them.
There's got to be some kind of logical explanation for this.
Stacy thought hard, but couldn't come up with anything that made sense. She turned to Julian.
We never let the die out of our sight, right?
Julian shook his head as he nervously fiddled with something in his pocket.
We've got to get out of here, said Chaz.
We're all well aware of your feelings on the matter, said Frank. We'll deal with you once we figure out our next move.
I know I'm not the most popular guy in the room right now, but you need to listen to me. That particular Mordred is insanely powerful. You can ask Cooper when he gets back. I don't have a lot of faith in those ropes and crystals keeping him contained for very much longer. And I've got a hunch that the other Mordreds will want to get this one back. We need to keep him moving and unaware of where he is at any given time.
Stacy resisted her natural instinct to punch Chaz in the face.
He's right. The collective Mordred knows where we are by now. He also knows that the dice are up for grabs. If we play our cards right, we might be able to use this to our advantage.
How's that?
Asked Rhonda skeptically.
Much like myself, Mordred's biggest weakness is hubris. We can use that to feed him false information and lure his other avatars into traps.
Frank shook his head.
I fucked up. He's not going to bother with us now that he knows we don't have the dice. There's no point in it. He knows we aren't going to kill the only Mordred we've got captive. That's our only leverage. He'll just let him stay in a vegetative state indefinitely while he seeks out the other dice. And he's almost certainly got more resources on hand to find them before we can.
Stacy moved in closer to Frank and whispered.
He doesn't necessarily know that the dice were dumped on the Crescent Shadow. We could still get a head start, and we might be able to point the other Mordreds in the wrong direction.
Frank nodded solemnly.
Oh, what about the Horsehead Inn?
We'll have to torch it.
Stacy felt bad about having to lay this on Frank, especially since she felt partially responsible for having lost the magical die.
We don't want to risk having other people come here to hang out when Mordred shows up to unleash his wrath.
She shrugged.
Maybe we can leave a clue as to where we've gone or something.
Frank looked up at her with despair in his eyes.
The Horsehead Inn has been our symbol of hope since we arrived here. If people show up here and find it burned to the ground again...
Let it go, Frank, said Tony the Elf. If a Mordred gets his hands on a real die, he'll be able to send himself back home and reestablish himself as master of this world. He won't fuck around with us again. He knows that we now know that we're a threat to him. He might not kill us outright, but he'll damn sure put some thought into how he can subjugate us and limit our opportunities to strike back. Or, more likely, he'll not want to take that chance and just kill us outright. Stacy's right. We need to get out of here. We need to be proactive and find those dice before he does.
Chapter 53. Hungry as she was, Catherine opted not to stop in at the Stinky Pickle on her way to the Temple of Life. She didn't know exactly how powerful the Eye of Rasha was, but it seemed like a pretty big deal. Maybe it might try to fuck with her mind like that ring in those movies about the midgets. Maybe it was emitting some kind of magical signal that would attract thieves to come try to steal it from her. These weren't chances she wanted to take. The sooner she got this transaction over with, the better. And besides, Tim would probably be hungry after being